Good evening. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry. Former Trump campaign chair Paul Manafort and his business associate Rick Gates have pleaded not guilty following their arrest today on charges related to conspiracy against the U.S. and other felonies. The charges are the first from the special counsel investigating possible coordination between the Trump campaign and Russia. Manafort and Gates appeared before a federal judge in Washington. They are charged with a combined 12 counts, including conspiracy to launder money, unregistered agent of a foreign principal, false statements, and 7 counts of failure to file reports of foreign bank and financial accounts. Manafort and Gates have both been released on home confinement following the hearing. Manafort was freed on a $10 million bond meant to guarantee his future court appearances. Gates was released on a $5 million bond. In other news, elected officials have marked the 5th anniversary of Superstorm Sandy by talking about the recovery that's been made and pledging to do more. And New Yorkers rallied over the weekend to talk about what more they could do. Eddie Bautista is with the New York City Environmental Justice Alliance.
Climate change is just layering on to existing inequities, a system that's disproportionately impacting low-income communities and communities of color. If we have systemic structural racism and classism, then of course climate change is only going to exacerbate those impacts. And so you can't really talk about climate change without understanding the disproportionate vulnerability of low-income communities of color. So especially for a mayor who talks about income inequality and a governor who, you know, likes to tout Fight for 15, for example, this is probably the most egregious example of disparity, of inequity, which is how climate change is going to impact our communities. And so we're calling on both the mayor and the governor to recognize that with as bold a policy agenda as they could possibly muster.
Bautista says listeners can encourage Governor Cuomo to move New York to 100% renewables by 2050.
Visit NewYorkRenews.org for a platform of policy recommendations of how to get there. At the city level, we work with a group called Climate Works for All. Visit that website to learn how New York City could do so much more to get the city to reduce its carbon footprint and generate tens of thousands of jobs in the process. There have been some efforts, like the Build It Back program by Mayor de Blasio, after a rough start, ended up having a good impact, but then he ends up recommending a building program to kind of reduce the city's fossil fuel use that only would reduce 7% of the state of the city's greenhouse gases. That's not nearly enough. At the governor's end, he's got a plan that's moving the state to 30% renewable by 2030. 50% renewable by 2030. Again, not nearly enough. The urgency of the moment calls for much bolder climate action. And this is what we're here demanding, both the mayor and the governor, to drastically and boldly expand the resiliency efforts that our city so desperately needs.
Superstorm Sandy caused 10 and 11-foot floods on much of Manhattan, Brooklyn, and Staten Island. It killed 43 people and ruined more than 88,000 buildings. There was a clear reminder of the severity of the impact of Sandy and potential for more damage from storms like it, with howling winds, heavy rains, and flash floods on Sunday and early this morning. Across New Jersey, more than 22,000 homes and businesses without electricity. On Long Island, shellfish harvesting areas in several towns in Nassau and Suffolk closed because of flooding. A new study found that New York City will be even more susceptible to flooding in the future than previously thought. By 2030, climate change is expected to bring major flooding to the city every 5 years.
We're asking the mayor and the governor to get on it now.
Karen Blondell from South Brooklyn lives in the waterfront community of Red Hook. She's an organizer with the Fifth Avenue Committee.
We don't have time to waste. We had two hurricanes. hurricanes, 500-year storms affecting Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands, Texas, Florida, and we also have issues with fire in California. Those are all the beginnings of what's going to happen if we don't start buckling down with our energy use.
400,000 people in New York live in the floodplain. Many of them live in public housing in very vulnerable communities. In 2012, during Sandy, Blondell says she stayed through the storm because so many seniors didn't want to leave.
And so I stayed in the building to make sure that the seniors were okay. And I literally saw the surge come up in Red Hook, and it completely destroyed our boilers and our electric systems. And we're still recuperating with challenges from that today. So one of the things I want to bring to everybody's attention is the fact that New York has a lot of waterfront, and we must protect our waterfront. So when I say climate, you say climate, climate. And then secondly, we need to talk about energy in this community. Some of the causes for climate change is our use in energy. 70% of the buildings in New York City need to be retrofitted to reduce the energy usage. We're calling for a just transition to renewable energy like wind and solar. We're calling for jobs. These new energies will create jobs in our community. And we're calling for a just transition.
Anashik Yichi Manitou, Anashik Kishela Mokwang, Elamiliang, Kukanaki, Walk Kishuk, Walk Nipahum, Walk Olongwewak, Walk Pepetawik. My name is Al. I'm a member of the Ramapo Lenape Nation, and we are the descendants of the original people of New York, of Manhattan. We are still here. Those words are from Munsee, one of the original languages of this place. We were once known as the grandfathers of this land. And what those words mean is, thank you, Great Spirit, thank you from whose thoughts we arose, for giving us today the earth, the sun, the moon, the stars, and thunder. It's a prayer for creation, it's a prayer of thanks to bring us back to what really matters in this world, our relationships with each other. We set up a site called the Split Rock Sweetwater Prayer Site in solidarity with the Standing Rock people who woke up this nation to the threats that these pipelines and the hydrofracking pose. I mean, they want to go ahead and build a pipeline through the Williams pipeline through this area. All pipelines leak, and we need to oppose these pipelines. We need to help save our waters and our air. At the Split Rock Sweetwater site, I encourage you all to go to the Facebook and support what we're doing, because we're not only fighting for your water and our water, we're fighting for the water for everyone. The town of Mahwah wants to destroy us. They want to take our land, and they're telling us we cannot even pray on our land that we have by private deed. And they're doing this because there are people in the community who own these million-dollar homes that don't want us there. Sometimes I just think to myself, how is it that you can call us trespassing when we're on our ancestral lands? The trespassers you need to worry about are the poisons to our water and our air. That's the trespassing you need to worry about.
Again, the Ramapo Facebook in solidarity with Standing Rock is Split Rock Sweetwater Prayer Camp.
The 45th president wants to destroy the EPA. I can't think of any other madness than that. We can go ahead and get rid of the Clean Water Act. We cannot get rid of our need for clean water.
Former Oklahoma Attorney General Donald Trump's head of the EPA is one of the many in his administration who casts doubt about the science of human-caused climate change. Scott Pruitt, a longtime adversary of the EPA and close friend to the fossil fuels industry, cheered when Trump pulled out of the Paris Climate Accord. The Trump administration worries Janet Mostrom. She's from Astoria in Queens.
I think I'm really just really concerned about climate change and also the way that it's being treated in our government. And at least in the federal level, they don't even like believe that climate change is real, and it's like not a big issue, and it's very stressful because it's really an emergency. And if we don't fix it in the next couple of years, if we don't take really strong measures to address it, then time will be up for us. And so, yeah, it's just really scary, and it's a real issue, and it's, you know, our government isn't acting in the best interest of the people, like, with the scientific knowledge that we have. So it's really frustrating, and I think the only thing you can do is march and act, like, try to get your government to change.
Annie Willis is with Food and Water Watch, an environmental activist born and raised in Far Rockaway, severely impacted by Sandy when she was a young teen.
On October 29th, 2012, my life changed. I remember the news telling us to evacuate, but we decided to stay because we weren't impacted by Irene. That night, I witnessed the pitch black water surge above cars come to my doorstep. I witnessed the broken window sound, the gushing of water in my basement. At 15, I felt hopeless. And that night, I knew that our lives would never be the same. After Sandy, we stayed in a cramped hotel room in Queens. I spent most of my high school career in a hotel room. After Sandy, I also witnessed, after 2 weeks, we had no hot water, no electricity, or heat. I think the hardest challenge after Sandy was getting my mental health back. I battled through depression, and all my family members went through mental battles of their own.
Willis says what's needed is for the mayor, governor, and Senator Schumer to be champions of bold climate actions and to commit the city to 100% renewables.
We remember the lives that was lost by Sandy. We remember the hospital shutting down. We remember not having lights, heat, or electricity. We remember. We resist. We resist the notion that storms like Sandy are normal. We resist the climate deniers in the White House. We rise. We rise against injustice. We rise against racism. We rise by holding our elected officials accountable. We rise by making sure that those elected officials support getting off fossil fuels and going green, 100% renewable energy. We rise by going out to vote, November 7th, y'all. We organize, we speak out, and we march. We remember, we resist, and we rise. Thank you.
Rachel Rivera is with New York Communities for Change.
Please excuse me, I just came from the hospital. My daughter, 11 years old, just had a nervous breakdown because I was talking to somebody about Hurricane Sandy. My daughter was only 6 years old. I almost lost my daughter. I was home in Bed-Stuy, not the red zone, nothing. I heard a cracking noise.
It's okay.
And I got scared. I took my daughter out of her bed, and the ceiling caved in on her bed. To this day, she goes to therapy. She cries to me every time it rains hard, saying, "Mommy, is it gonna happen again? Are we gonna live or are we gonna die?"
Rivera was displaced from her home. She says even 5 years later, we're still struggling. And as the attention keeps shifting to the next hurricane, she says we keep forgetting the victims from the last one. Elizabeth Yampier remembers those victims, and she also looks at those who are being victimized in Puerto Rico. Yampier is director of UpRose, Brooklyn's oldest Latino community-based organization, and she's co-chair of the Climate Justice Alliance.
Sandy happened 5 years ago, and just in
the last 2 months, we have had several extreme weather events, from the wildfires in California to Harvey in Houston and to the devastation in Puerto Rico. We need to basically let everybody know that we are now living in the age of climate change, and that climate change is going to affect the front line more than any other. It's already shown to do so.
Jan Pierre sees a relationship between climate change and how the federal government has and is treating Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico has a history of being extracted by the United States. It's been, it has for the last, 100 years, been what the United States has exploited. It has created an economy that is not only based on extraction, but has put the Puerto Rican people in a vulnerable situation to be able to fend for themselves at a time like this. There is a connection between the United States and its history of burning fossil fuel and climate change all over the United States. And there certainly is a direct connection between Puerto Rico's situation and its political status.
Marty Goodman, a retired transit union worker and member of Socialist Action, also speaks out against the U.S. treatment of the island.
The world is going through a cataclysmic crisis. There are innumerable fires in the west, hurricanes stalking the people in the Caribbean, and I'm very concerned about the crisis in Puerto Rico. Trump's racist treatment of the Puerto Rican people, who are officially anyway Americans, but they're not treated that way. And there's a contract with a small energy company of two people for $300 million. It looks like graft and influence, and Trump is responsible for that. There are people suffering. There's disease that's spreading, and it's Trump who bears the burden, and the ruling class of this country, which has always treated the Puerto Rican people like a colony and a racist slave camp for labor. So that's why I'm here today. We've got to socialize, nationalize the climate in this country, because it's in the hands of a few people, and we need to take it out of their hands and put it in the hands of the majority, working people.
On Sunday, the contract between Puerto Rico and a small Montana company in Whitefish, Montana, it has a population of about 6,000, Whitefish Energy Holdings, that contract was canceled. This comes out of probes into how a two-person energy company in the hometown of Ryan Zinke, Donald Trump's Secretary of the Interior, got a $300 million no-bid contract to restore electricity to Puerto Rico. Audits of the Whitefish contract at a local and federal level are now underway. Meanwhile, more than a month after Hurricane Maria struck the U.S. territory on September 20th, roughly 70% of the island remains without power. Governor Andrew Cuomo was on the island over the weekend.
I would love to be able to say that there's been tremendous progress since the first time we were in Puerto Rico, which was basically the day after the hurricane, to today. But that is not true. The situation is still deplorable in Puerto Rico. You have about 80% of the people without power. You have about 30% of the people without clean drinking water. And it is still a critical situation. Governor Rosselló wanted me to extend his thanks to the people of New York. We've sent over 3,000 pallets of donated goods. It's really been extraordinary the way New Yorkers have stepped up to help. And Governor Rosselló wanted to extend his personal thanks. The fact that the recovery has been as slow as it is in Puerto Rico, in my opinion, they deserve much better, and we should have made more progress by now. 36 days, and you still don't have power to 80% of the island is incredible. We went through Hurricane Sandy, if you remember, on Long Island, and 3-4 days without power was like a lifetime. This has been now 36 days without power. If you have to wonder if you had a state in the United States that went 36 days without power, what kind of reaction you would have. It would be on the TV news every night. People would be outraged. And people tend to forget that Puerto Ricans are Americans. And they really did deserve a better response than they're getting. I told the governor and the officials in Puerto Rico, the Army Corps of Engineers is now heading up the power recovery effort with the Power Authority of Puerto Rico. New York utilities would send down hundreds of crews, and we would do that within days from our utility companies. If the Army Corps of Engineers wanted that assistance under the, what's called the mutual aid program. But there's no excuse for the delay, in my opinion. The governor of Puerto Rico, Governor Rosselló, is also very interested in using this as an opportunity to build in resiliency into Puerto Rico. There's no doubt that a lot of the systems that were there needed help. The power system, the communication system. And there's also no doubt that after you go through a crisis like this, it is an opportunity not just to replace what was there, but to rebuild and to rebuild better.
Governor Andrew Cuomo in Puerto Rico. In other environmental news, with cold weather approaching, there's concern over the elimination of programs which help low-income New Yorkers keep warm in their homes and in their apartments. Andrea Sears reports.
The Federal Department of Health and Human Services has begun distributing funds for the Low Income Energy Assistance Program, or LIHEAP, for the 2018 fiscal year. But the Trump administration says the program is no longer necessary and wants to eliminate it and other energy assistance programs from the budget. According to Cheryl Musgrove with the Pace University Energy and Climate Center, LIHEAP is vital to the health and safety of the most vulnerable families.
It served 1.2 million New York households in 2014, and 94% of these households had either an elderly member, a disabled member, or a young child.
Funding for LIHEAP is included in the continuing resolution passed by the House and the Senate, which expires on December 8th. That sets the framework for negotiating the final 2018 budget. Also at risk is the Weatherization Assistance Program, which helps low-income families cut energy costs. Musgrove points out that in 2015, almost 13,000 low-income families in New York received more than $57 million through that program.
Through weatherization improvements and home efficiency upgrades, it's estimated that the average household will save at least $283 per year on their energy bills.
She adds that efficiency upgrades also make homes healthier by removing asthma and allergy triggers, saving families money and avoided medical costs. And Musgrove notes that the energy efficiency programs are cost-effective, returning almost $4 for every dollar invested.
They bring economic development to the state as well. They bring jobs, they increase health, and they bring money in, which provides a boost to our economy.
In a single year, she says, the Weatherization Assistance Program brought more than $192 million in economic benefits to New York. For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
And that's some of the news for Monday, October 30th, 2017. The news was produced with Akeem Killick, Andrea Sears, and Reggie Johnson. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.